Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie broadcasts on NPR.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk, the Oscars. Let's open up by just going for the big one. Were you surprised that Anora won for Best Picture?
Not at all. This, as Academy Award shows go, this was not one of the more difficult ones to predict. Anora has been riding the tide of Golden Globe Awards, BAFTA, the SAG Awards, so I think it was safe to say that most people thought it was going to come down to either Anora or Conclave, one of those two.
Well, Ken, you know, I was skeptical as to whether it would. It was a great film when I saw it, but it is such a wild movie.
This year's Poor Thing. Got a very, very bold performance by a dynamic Mikey Madsen. Lots of nudity again. Like Poor Things, you have a gratuitous amount of sex and nudity. So that part of cinema has not gone away. As much as we've become prudes compared to European films, it's nice to see two very bold films in 2 years in a row taking the top spot.
And it's a pretty bold for them to be studying a sex worker.
What I like about that is it treats the sex worker as a person. It treats the person as a responsible human being who is in control of their life, yes, in control of their actions. They are not some drug addict who's being dragged through the streets. This is a person who made a conscious decision to become a sex worker and is taking responsibility for it.
Yeah, and beside being pretty wild as a topic goes, it also has an allegorical application now when you consider the flap that went on at the White House recently.
Oh,
between,
yes,
Zelensky, yeah, and our two major players.
Yes.
And when you think about the interaction between Russia and the United States.
Well, you've got the dominant Russian billionaire mob boss who is the father of the boy,
right,
who shows up, and his wife, who immediately take control of everything, and everybody's bowing down to them, sort of symbolic to some politics that are going on in America today.
It's a pretty good film, and it's a great performance. She won Best Actress.
I was not at all. And the ceremony last night had a couple surprises. Not as many as some people might be telling you, but it was a bit more predictable. But there were two big surprises, and one of them was Mikey Madsen winning over Demi Moore. If somebody had asked me an hour before the ceremony yesterday, which category is a lock? Which category would you put money on? I would have said Demi Moore, yep, hands down, because Demi has been going through the Golden Globes, the SAGs, the BAFTAs, giving these wonderful speeches in support of the way in which actresses are treated in Hollywood, the unfair way in which their careers are cut short once they hit about 30, as opposed to men who can continue beating leading men up until their 70s.
What pleased me is that it looks like the Academy actually gave an award for talent.
They very much did.
And performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mikey's performance is far more nuanced than Demi Moore's. And what the way you were describing it was perfect. Demi Moore's has an awful lot of sentiment about it, an awful lot of history about it.
She was definitely making a statement.
Right.
That movie is making a statement, and a lot of the actresses in Hollywood were embracing that statement, as were a lot of women in the audiences.
Look at us. We're not getting through anything.
No. Well,
you are the worst and the best to have. Actually, I'd like to say that you won the prize at the Drexel Theater.
Oh, John, well, thank you.
For guessing the most
every
winners.
Year that we're not supposed to promote anything, but every year the Drexel Theater has a red carpet bash in which they give out prizes, and we all get to watch the Oscars on the big screen, and you get to pick your ballot and turn the ballot in, and every year somebody is going to win a one-year free pass to the Drexel Theater.
And who better than you?
Well,
because I don't know about anybody else who has watched more films than you.
Last year I watched 139 films, and I'm sure that helped a little bit, did a little bit of research, and you also kind of have to have your finger on the pulse of Hollywood and what is building momentum, and that's why I went with Flo.
See, okay, I knew he would get to Flo.
Yeah. You knew there was no avoiding this.
Now, Flo won the best animation.
Best feature animation.
Right.
Yep.
You were telling me months ago that you thought Flo would be a contender for Best Picture.
I did, because the movie is just so beautiful, and I love the idea that it allows you to decide what the theme and what the movie is about. There's no narrative that's clear cut. It's a movie that you interpret. And also, animation in Oscars tends to favor the independent filmmakers. We saw that last year when Hayao Miyazaki won for The Boy and the Heron, not one of his best movies. And so I think animators are really trying to embrace independence as opposed to watching Disney or DreamWorks win every single year.
Another category that always interests me is Best Actor. Now, we get to talk a little bit about Best Actor and a film that I thought was maybe the best movie of the year.
The Brutalist. And Adrian Brody.
Right, and Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody gave what I think is one of the best and most definitive speeches of the evening when he talked about how it had been 20 years since he won his last Academy Award, and he was concerned that he was no longer employable. And this is the heart of what really was going on last night with the Oscars. We can talk about independent individual movies, but the overall theme of the Oscars last night is that there is a wave riding through Hollywood right now that the independent studios, the independent filmmakers are now at the forefront. They're now guiding Hollywood. The big studios are falling behind and losing money like crazy. And a good way to describe this, and I'm glad you're giving me the opportunity to say this, is the top movie, the winner, Anora, cost $10 million to make. The Brutalist cost $10 million to make. Flo cost $3 million to make. Those three movies encompassed the majority of the awards last night. Total out-of-pocket there, $23 million. That is less than half of the $50 million that Disney paid Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, to appear in Red One, a movie that cost $260 million and lost over $200 million.
Yeah.
So this is what is going on in Hollywood, folks, is the small independence of filmmakers making these $8, $9, $10 million movies. They are the ones who are now defining what cinema is, while the studios throw away sinful amounts of money on films that do not draw in people.
Films, as they're now evolving in Hollywood, and I think you're onto it. I'm hoping this is a trend, because you can see there's an equivalency between almost the cost and the creativity. And the poorer people are always more creative.
And that is very,
wealthy.
Very well put. I remember when Steven Spielberg was asked about making Raiders of the Lost Ark, he wanted $35 million for Raiders. They gave him 11. And he had to cut and scrape and slash that script. And he said later on he was so happy they did that because it made him get to the essentials of that story and cut out all the dead weight. And if he had made his $35 million version, he said it would have been very pretentious.
All right.
So. And this is what is so the soul of Hollywood right now is independent film saying something. If you remember the winner who won Best Director,
John Baker.
His comment is, going to the movies, don't let it become a thing of the past. Since COVID, we've lost 1,000 screens, and it's actually conservative, it's more like 1,100. And if you want your children and your grandchildren to have the same experience of seeing movies in movie theaters as a community, we've got to do everything we can to make sure that people are going back into the theaters, seeing them that way, especially independent theaters.
Ken, I'm hoping this is worldwide. I'm hoping your spirit and our wish for more creative and less expense goes. Now, a movie that won the Best International Film.
I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. You saw it later than I did.
Yes.
You brought me into Flo, and I brought you into I'm still here.
Yes, you did.
But we both admit it's a superior film. Well, as we look at all the films, it'd probably be less expensive than most of those as well.
Certainly.
I'm still here. And there's a film that is so classy and so much in the tradition of good Hollywood. Would you say this is a worthwhile film, I'm Still Here?
I'm Still Here is very much a worthwhile film. Anything that gets nominated for an Academy Award is deserving of an Academy Award. I've never seen a nominee that was really undeserving.
Yeah, that's a great point.
But I'm Still Here definitely was deserving of the win.
Yes.
And now, as much as I love Flo, and Flo was in that category, and I would not have been brokenhearted if Flo had won it.
Right.
I'm Still Here is telling an important story about Brazil when it fell under a totalitarian government, and how easy it was for even somebody who was a former congressman to be swept up and disappeared.
Yes, and a comment on our YouTube is that I was the only North American to say his name correctly, Ruben Zviva. Really?
Very good, John.
Yeah. We have watchers all over the world. And apparently we did a good job with that. I did that with Audrey. We enjoyed it very much. There's a film that's in the spirit of what you're talking about. It's not just the U.S., but around the world, they've never had the budgets that we've had.
Other than China. China now is where we were in 2019. They're making $200 million movies.
Yes.
And there's a Chinese movie making the rounds right now, an animated film that may break $2 billion in the worldwide box office. No film has ever done that. Right. No film's ever earned $2 billion. Mickey 17. Yes, that is the science fiction film. Yes. And that film looks very, very good. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, though, because these are films for
next
year's Oscars.
Mickey 17.
Mickey 17.
Yeah.
That comes out at the end of
March. All right, so yes.
So getting back to the Oscars, though, the heart of this Oscar is how much independent film now is dominating Hollywood and how good that is. What a great thing that is. The big loser last night was Disney, hands down. Disney did not walk away, even with the best song that they usually pick up from one of their animated movies. They didn't have any of their big budget films do well. Their one film that was in the running there was A Complete Unknown, didn't get anything.
But it's gotten some good cover. I mean, there are people who have liked this very
much. Oh, absolutely.
And there are some who thought it was the best film. I didn't. I thought Chalamet was one of the best actors.
Oh, yeah.
But, that wasn't going to go because Adrian Brody was superior in so many ways.
Timothy could have taken it. That was a very much question mark because, of course, Brody, the Brutalist, did not do as well at the box office as they hoped. Of course, it's a 3.5-hour movie, which doesn't help.
All right, but Ken, just briefly, on the Brutalist, allegedly they had used, in fact, I think they did use AI to enhance the
Hungarian dialect.
Yes.
And to make their voices sound more naturally Hungarian.
And some were saying this is why it didn't have a chance. I say no, it didn't have a chance.
No, well, we got disproved last night.
Right,
Brody got up there and took the Oscar despite the little bit of tweaking of his voice. Didn't seem to have an impact. They still realized 99% of that performance was him.
And the other one that I had real hopes for, Emilia Perez, got knocked down for no question about it. It was compromised by the comments or the Twitters.
It was a little tainted, and of course Conan O'Brien got one of his best jokes of the evening in there when he mentioned the 450 F-bombs, and those were actually her agent every time she tweeted.
The leading actress.
Gascon. it won the awards that it was deserving to win.
Okay,
Zoe Saldana, very deserving to win. Would I like to have seen Ariana Grande pick it up? Yeah, of course I would have, but still, Zoe gave a tremendous performance in that film. She deserved to win. The best song, it got that as well. It got the awards it deserved. It was represented. The other thing that went on that last night, briefly, let's talk about some of the outfits.
Ken, you know that I'm averse to watching the ceremony because, as I tell in my snarky way, that I don't like to see so many people so in need of applause. spending a whole night with them is like spending a night with Jerry Lewis. I can't do it. So tell me what I missed in the ceremony.
You missed a very good ceremony. Conan O'Brien did a great job.
All right.
Nobody got slapped. There was no big goof-ups, no faux pas. Nobody went up and made a complete fool of themselves. We'll talk about fashion a little bit first. In my opinion, the best-dressed person of the evening was
Adam Sandler?
Coleman Domingo.
No, I see.
Coleman Domingo showed up. Am I getting that right, Coleman Domingo?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, he showed up in this absolutely fantastic red sash tuxedo. Beautiful.
Ah.
Just he was there in the front row, stood out, even next to Ariana Grande in her giant Beauty and the Beast gown. He stood out. He looked fantastic.
And he was a nominee for Best Actor.
For Best Actor for Sing Sing. Sing.
Yeah.
On the flip side was Timothy Chalamet, who decided to show up in a neon yellow tuxedo with neon yellow trim and an open fringe pants, who was the brunt of Conan's jokes most of the night. Conan pointed out now if he could wanted to ride his bicycle home, he'd be in no danger of being struck.
And Adam Sandler picked on him too, but this, of course, all this is all rehearsed.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And it's all for fun. There was an opening thing with John Lithgow where they said, anytime somebody talks too long, John is going to give a pouty face. And he did a beautiful job of his pouty face, let me tell you.
Is there anything that we missed?
There's one thing I want to talk about because it's something I think that the audience might have missed. Unless you're in touch with what's going on in Hollywood and very up to date, you might have wondered what was going on. And
We are talking about the Oscars. We kind of floated into this blog without, I think, explaining really what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
This is for both our shows, for both our podcasts, Back Talk and Double Take. Mm-hmm. And we're extending our It's Movie Time and Cinema Classic shows to this. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
So the one thing that happened last night that I think viewers might not have fully appreciated is the James Bond retrospective.
Okay.
You know, it was a beautiful 10-minute sequence where they sang several of the James Bond themes. They gave a visual presentation of all the people who acted Bond, sort of a retrospective. But it might have drawn some question of why are we tonight doing a James Bond retrospective? We can still make James Bond movies. Nothing's ended. Nobody's died. Well, that's not entirely true. What has happened is, ever since the first James Bond film in 1962, Dr. No, the Bond films have been produced first by a fellow named, wait for it, Cubby Broccoli. And then after he passed away several years ago, his son and daughter have picked it up. And all Bond films up to, all the way from Dr. No, right up to the No Time to Die, the last Daniel Craig film, were produced by the Broccolis. So their DNA, their fingerprint has been all over all of the Bond films. Well, what's happened recently is the James Bond franchise started out with United Artists, then merged into MGM. Well, now it's been acquired by Amazon. And under Amazon, Jeff Bezos and his Amazon Studios team have a new vision for James Bond, what they want to do with the franchise. They did talk to the Broccolis, the son and daughter, and they offered them a space on board, but when they heard what direction that Bezos and Amazon wants to take the show in, it was a direction that they had been resisting going for the last 30 years, so they jumped off board. And now, moving forward, we're going to have a very different kind of James
Bond. But for years, Barbara Broccoli has, even since his death, and she has taken over, and she has watched it very carefully.
She has.
My granddaughter, Alexandra, visited her to help with some legal documents because she was notarizing. And Barbara said, could not believe that my granddaughter knew that much about James Bond. So she said, I have a little gift for you. So she brought her into the other room, and she met Daniel Craig.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah.
In a snarky DeSando way, she commented to me that how he wasn't as tall as she thought he should be. but anyway, you're right. You're right.
They have done such a terrific job keeping the Bond franchise intact. It's not drifted off into weird directions. Yeah. And not to give anything away, but the direction that Amazon wants to take it and what they want to introduce that the Broccolis have always resisted is they want to start introducing supernatural elements to the Bond films.
Enough, so, Ken.
Yeah. That was why there was this retrospective about Bond, is because in a way, this is the end of the era. This is the end of the classic James Bond.
See, that's my only mistake in having you, is that you've got this head, you and Wayne Miller, your heads are just full of this garbage, and you just can't wait to spit it out. Sure that our audience appreciates it. But let's get back to the Oscars.
Sure.
What we're talking. Now, we talked about on our shows, our regular broadcast shows, we talked about the winner, Inora.
Yeah.
So is there something you want to say that kind of encapsulates what your impression was of Inora for our audience who may not have listened to our regular broadcast?
So Inora was this year's Poor Things. It's a movie with a strong female lead, dysfunctional men, and in so many ways it parallels Poor Things, which is why I wonder why anybody ever doubted it was going to win.
Yeah.
Such a great performance by Mikey Madsen, and the whole cast really just gave a terrific show. Done on a shoestring budget, $10 million, filmed on location all over New York City. And what I really like about it is it treats the sex workers with dignity, with respect, and it shows that they are in charge of their lives.
Right, right.
Which has not always been the way in which media likes to portray sex work.
And as a work of art, which I always think our winners are works of art, it will bear up over the years under the allegorical interpretation of the relationship between Russia and the United States.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that it's there. I'm not sure that they had that foremost in their minds when they must have started a couple of years ago to make this film. But now with the kerfuffle in the White House, or actually the embarrassment in the White House, between the team-up between Vance and Trump on poor Zelensky, it has more heft to it. It has much more to talk about. It gets much more going. Okay, that's Anora. Is there anything else that you'd want our podcast audience to be aware of for the Oscars?
Well, there was...
We have to think that they didn't hear our regular broadcast.
Oh.
They're not quite sure where we have gone with this.
There was some very, very good speeches at the Oscars. I was very, very pleased with Sean Baker's speech, talking about the importance of seeing movies in theaters.
Good. Yep.
Great, great speech. And I thought there was some really good displays of genuine gratitude from the performers when they were up there. One point that Adrian Brody made is how easy it is, after winning an Academy Award 20 years ago, to fall into the belief that you're not good enough anymore. You're being overlooked. You have no future. When he held up his Oscar, he said, "This tells me I can work for a living for another 20 years in this career that I've chosen."
Yeah.
The fact that he doubted that, it says so much. But that is in part because the studios, the big studios, have been throwing $50 million at the same 10 actors and excluding everybody else. Dwayne Johnson's getting $50 million. Harrison Ford's getting $40 million. But then the Adrian Brodies of the world are getting left behind and in doubt for their own careers. And what independent cinema has done is it has opened a door for them to come through, still act, still show the tremendous performance abilities they have, the talent they have, and not have to fear for their lives because the big studios are only doing Marvel, or they're only doing Star Wars, or they're only doing this or that, and they're only looking for these same five people.
Well, and just to extend that appreciation, it's also because somebody like Adrian Brody gets a screenplay that fits him, that on which he can build himself.
Yeah.
So let's not forget, and so how many times we do forget, a screenplay is where it begins. And if they're faithful to it, as many times they are, it can give a good actor a chance to become an Oscar winner.
And that is why casting is so important. And next year at the Oscars, we're going to have a new category, Best Casting.
Oh, good.
And what that
Wonderful.
Really is going to represent is the best ensemble cast.
That's
because, you know, anybody can cast two characters and do it well. But when you're casting a film like The Brutalist, or you're casting a film like Wicked, where you've got a huge cast, there's a chance you're going to make some mistakes. And what that is going to do is it's going to reward the entire ensemble, including the supporting actors who maybe didn't get that supporting actor nod.
The hidden heroes of Oscars for me are the casting people.
Absolutely.
I mean, how do they know? I just sit back, and I've seen so many movies, but I say to myself, how do they know this actor would be so good part?
When you think about when they cast the first Harry Potter movie, they went through thousands of children, literally thousands of children, to find
amazing,
few that made it in the film. And you know, a casting director's job has got to be incredibly tedious.
Yeah. But they have to be incredibly talented.
They have to be incredibly good, and they have to know what that script is looking for.
Yes, yes.
They have to know who is going to be a good fit. Because I've seen movies where people were badly miscast, and it ruins the whole story.
Well, you and I were talking about the maturing of Hollywood films into smaller budgets and bigger creativity, I think. I wasn't sure that Anora would make the best picture because it was so a little bit wild, a little bit out there. And you were always saying, it's like Pretty Things, is it? Is it
Poor Things.
I always want to say Pretty Things.
This trend can only make the Hollywood better, because instead of putting out five movies at $200 million each, you can now put out 20 movies at $10 million each. And, okay, maybe a few of them are going to fall by the wayside, but there's going to be six, seven, eight gems in there
Well, let me say this, that in the history, I want it, you know how I'm angling to get it, mm-hmm. at the history of these Oscars. Oppenheimer last year was a pretty traditional film, didn't you think?
It was a pretty traditional biopic with some really tremendous cinematography
right.
and some great acting.
But as we're talking about Inora, there's a big difference between the two. So I'm reluctant to say this is a trend now. The wilder, more creative one like Inora. But then we did have Everything Everywhere All at Once the previous year.
Very low-budget movie that came completely out of left field, got released in March. And usually March movies never get into the Oscars, but it had staying power.
Yes, it did.
What Hollywood, I think, is doing now is it's de-evolving from Titanic. Titanic made a statement to Hollywood that if you spent $200 million on a huge budget movie, it is going to pull in everybody and it's going to make $1 billion and everybody's going to love it. And that does not work. Titanic was an anomaly. It is not the norm. There's plenty of $200 million movies like Red One that have crashed and burned, and it makes me sick when I think of all that money that could have been spent on 20 other films.
But don't you think that it's taken us a long time to get away from Gone with the Wind?
Oh, yeah.
There's no question. I think that how many years it's taken us to get to this point.
And there's still room in the world for the Gone with the Winds and the Titanics to come along, but limit them. Limit them. Don't spend $200 million on a Marvel movie and sacrifice 20 movies like Inora or Brutalist.
But Ken, let me throw out the names of a few before that from 1921 down that were smaller films, mm-hmm. I thought. Yeah. Coda. Small film.
Yeah, small independent film.
Nomadland.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about a small film. And Parasite, which is kind of got that Asian incursion.
First international film to take Best Picture.
Good one. Green Book was an oddity to me, but it's still a small film.
Yeah.
The Shape of Water.
That was very much an anomaly. That was the first science fiction film to ever win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
That's right. But then we had three also, starting in 2016, down, Moonlight, Spotlight, and Birdman.
Yeah.
Which were, again, smaller films.
Birdman was a small independent film, very limited budget, and it took poor Michael Keaton years to get that thing in motion budget and get the backing to make that movie. So many times people told Michael, this movie makes no sense, don't do it, and you've got to have so much resistance you have to have such thick skin in Hollywood because you're going to get so much negativity thrown at you.
Well, I'll end up by saying one that I thought launched us on to better quality films was back in 2013 when we had 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Which I thought was a classy film.
Yes.
That had a lot of the combination of elements that make a great Hollywood film and that bring us to appreciating Inora. So, K.G. Klein, I knew having you, I got all these notes. I knew this would be worthless because we would have so much to say. Give us some final words on Oscars. These are the motion pictures in 2024 that were awarded in 2025.
Yeah. So
closing comments
is don't just see the movies that won. See the movies that were nominated. And then use those movies as stepping stones to find other films. You like that director? See the other movies that director's done. You like that score? Listen to the other films that have used that composer. You like that actor or that actress? Find their other works because you know what? You're going to find a lot of hidden gems. For every movie that got nominated, there were 10 other movies just as deserving that didn't get nominated and are worthy to be seen. And we were talking earlier about Ghostlight.
Yes.
Ghostlight.
And you're hurting me. Sing Sing.
Sing Sing. Tremendous film.
Small film
got nominated. And as good as Sing Sing is, I liked Ghostlight better. But it's available on streaming. Folks, find Ghostlight. Watch Ghostlight. If you liked Sing Sing, if you liked Inora, you're going to love Ghostlight.
Well, if you're less rabid than we are about movies, I think the best advice we give them, spinning off of your advice, is go to the nominees for this year and spend your year looking at those nominees. And you can't have a better education. Your comment is so well taken. These are all good films. All the nominees are great films. Even if they didn't win the Oscar, if they were nominated, you can guarantee you won't be bored.